This is The State of Things. I'm Frank Stacia.
All right, I'm gonna get it right this time. That first one kind of janky. That first one janky said we gonna do it, man. It's all right. It don't matter. That's what I told him. I'm like, you can leave. You know what I'm saying? If you wanna go, you can go. But the name stays home. Let's get it going like this. Foreign exchange style. Just some little something for y'all to vibe to. A little something to bounce to, rock to, whatever, you know.
That's Fonte Coleman of the hip-hop group The Foreign Exchange singing Brave New World off their debut album, Connected. Fonte is also MC of the Durham-based group Little Brother. They're slated to come out with a new record on Atlantic this year. Fonte joins us now. Fonte, thanks for being here.
Thanks for having me, man. Thanks a lot.
Also, Mitch Easter, celebrated indie rock producer based in Kernersville, North Carolina. He produced REM's debut album, Murmur, and numerous other underground rock bands since then. He has, in a way, presided over the rise of independent rock music in the South. Also a musician himself, was the founding member of the 80s cult favorite band Let's Active. This is a room. That's actually Marty Jones playing Let's Active's Room with a View. An Australian record label released a Let's Active tribute album last year. Let's Active's founding member and record producer Mitch Easter is here. Mitch, thanks for joining us.
Thanks, Frank. Glad to be here.
Well, now, we've invited both of you today to be part of the special edition of State of Things. You're both prominent musicians, both producers in North Carolina, and we're here today not so much to talk about the music you make, but about the music you listen to. So I want to get right to it. We'll start with you, Fonte. What's in your CD player right now?
My CD player right now, I'm listening to a lot of Parliament Funkadelic, man. My girlfriend, she seems to like that stuff. I don't know, you know, whenever we can have like the biggest argument, but the minute I put on, you know, some P-Funk, all is forgiven, and it like gets in the mood or whatever. So I've been playing a lot of that, man. It keeps me out the doghouse. So.
Does that mean you start to like it as you're listening to it more, or you just like the piece around the house?
Well, I've always liked it, but, you know, a lot of the stuff, you know, because my uncle coming up, he was a real big P-Funk fan, and, you know, but I was like 6 or 7 hearing this stuff, and I remember liking the music, but I didn't really get it all. So now, as I'm older, I'm catching like a lot of the little inside joke, you know, the drug references and, you know, stuff like that. So it makes a lot more sense now, and I can appreciate it more on that level. Also, on the musical and harmonic level as well.
All right, well, let's listen to some right here.
Wow, baby. My goodness, you meet the baddest mermaid I done seen around here in years, out of years. Now listen here, you got anything against dolphins? Can't scare them. Can we go somewhere? Anywhere, I don't care. Ever since I came through the door. Let's go down. Let's go down.
That's You're a Fish and I'm a Water Sign from Parliament. That brings peace and harmony around
the house. It works wonders. You wouldn't believe it. Like the first note, as soon as he comes, ooh, in a whirlpool, it's over. It's over. So.
It's smooth stuff. Came out in what, 78? Is that before you were born?
I'm sure this one came out, I think, a couple months before I was born. I was born in 78, but, you know, I think that one came out before I was born. It's from the Motor Booty Affair album. And just really one of my favorite concept albums of all time. It was Parliament just had a knack for doing that kind of thing, just making these weird concept albums, but they work, you know, so.
But you said you started listening to it, you were around 6 or 7 when you first started hearing that music?
Yeah, like 6 or 7, my uncle Broderick, I remember he got a CD player for his Christmas, and I would go to his house, and he was the only one who would let me go through his CDs and play CDs. So I remember like him having just a lot of P-Funk and, you know, a lot of the George Clinton, Bootsy Collins stuff. And, you know, I just remember just hearing those sounds and hearing the keyboards and, you know, the vocal harmonies. And, like, they just, from an early age, like, I just knew that's where it was. It was just like, I don't know, man, just somehow that just really spoke to me. And then on the other hand, you had the pop stuff like Michael Jackson, and that was, like, real sweet and pretty and stuff, so... I don't know, man. I guess just something about that stuff just kind of spoke to me. And even then, I just knew that it was something in that.
How did you feel about hip-hop at the time?
Oh, man, I loved it. It was, you know, it spoke to me as well, just, I guess, on a different level. I just remember, like, the curse words and stuff. And I remember, like, my mom having to buy tapes and, like, listen to them real low so my mother wouldn't hear it and stuff. You know what I'm saying? And... then I get mad. She get mad. Cut it down. Why all that cursing? I'm like, Mom, you cussing me when you get mad at me? And then, you know, I get beat by then. But so after a while, I just learned just to not talk and just listen to my music low, you know. But yeah, hip hop. That was, you know, those early recordings, man. Those really just changed my life. Really changed my life.
See, Fonte, if you'd have been thinking, you'd have slipped the Parliament in right then and there to see if it worked on your mind.
I know. I should have been thinking.
How that goes. Were there times, I wonder, again, you know, 6 or 7 years old, when you're listening to these smooth vocals and this kind of a really smooth R&B sound, and all of a sudden, or already, you know, rap is starting to replace that with a much more gritty kind of a sound. Was there a conflict? Was there a sense, you know, that you had to make a choice? Were people already identifying themselves with the older sound or the newer sound, and it was kind of a badge of who you were?
I don't know, man. I think, like, for me, it was just really... I guess there was an element in both of those types of music that I heard. And I guess if you want to call that element soul, you know, you can call it that. But, you know, whatever you call it was just an element of soul or just truth in it that I just could latch on to. You know what I'm saying? It was just something in that. And I think that's true for all music. You know what I'm saying? People divide music by, you know, rock or rap or new wave, techno, whatever. But I just think when you know something is good, you know it's good. And I think, you know, even from the stuff that my selections you'll hear, and even some of the stuff that, like, Mitchell play, I mean, because I was looking through his CDs earlier, and our stuff is totally different from each other, but I know it's some soul in that. You know what I'm saying? I'm sure it'll be something, some element in there that I could find and be like, oh, okay, this is where it is. This is the part of the song that I like. And I think that's true for all music. So for me, it wasn't so much as just choosing a side as much as it was just listening to any type of music and just finding the one element that I could relate to and just latching onto that.
We don't want to leave you out of this conversation, Mitch. We're certainly going to hear from you and your selections as the program goes on. But you've been through a number of eras now, changes in the music scene. Do you get a sense that they're as epical, that there are these sort of walls between the forms of music that some of us sense and certainly writers and reviewers like to include in their reviews? Or has it been a little less abrupt for you?
Well, it's kind of like, you know, you get a bunch of musicians together talking about music and they kind of like each other's stuff and they just like music. But, you know, in order to write about it, you've got to describe it, you've got to compare it, you've got to point out what's different, you know. I mean, these things do sound really different, but it is interesting that it also seems to be kind of like a human instinct to make music. So at that level, it always comes back to a unity. But, you know, it's fun the way it splits apart and falls apart and clashes. I mean, without that, you don't really have much energy, you know. So like when the punk scene came along, it was necessary to destroy classic rock, and I was ready to destroy it too, you know. It seemed like a really good idea, you know. So I mean, you know, I think that destructive part of it is okay. I mean, you just can't take any of it too terribly seriously. It's culture. You know, we're talking about details here, you know.
It sounds to me like you're saying, too, there's a soul of the thing that stays alive and always rises from the ashes.
Well, absolutely. And the part that has to get sort of wiped out is the you know, the sort of mountains of soulless sort of commercial stuff that always comes up because, you know, and you can't blame people for trying to make a living doing this. It would be nice to do that. But but it does, you know how it is. There's always going to be kind of a
pioneer and then a bunch of copycats.
Yeah, and a lot of that stuff is just kind of in racket. You know, it'd be nice to sort of get that out of the way. So because it's like, you know, that leads to that whole effect we have now of the million TV channels and what do we watch, you know.
Exactly.
Better just turn it off, you know, and that can happen in music too.
I want to talk some more about this on the State of Things, talking today with two North Carolina musicians, rapper Fonte Coleman of the hip-hop groups Little Brother and Foreign Exchange, and renowned indie rock producer Mitch Easter. Just ahead, we'll find out what Mitch listened to on his drive to the station. Support for the State of Things comes from the Corporation for Public Broadcasting and listeners who support WUNC. This is The State of Things. I'm Frank Stachow. We're talking today with musicians and producers Fonte Coleman and Mitch Easter. Mitch currently plays with his wife's band, Shalini. A track from her 2004 album, Metal Corner, has been chosen for use in an MTV reality show, and we are certainly looking forward to that. Mitch is with us today, along with Fonte. Mitch, I got to tell you, I'm very happy for your success, but, you know, does the world need another reality show?
The answer is no.
I'm real happy to hear, though, that you're meeting with some success, some more success, I should say. And we're also here to talk about your music, the music you listen to. So what's in your CD player right now?
Right now, what's in my CD player is a song, well, I guess you could call it a song, a track, Beauty and the Beast by Wendy Carlos.
Yeah.
This was recorded in about 86, and I just got this recently, and I just haven't been able to take it out of the machine. I've always liked electronic music, and this record I like because she's trying to stay away from even, like, Western tuning, you know, like where it sounds out of tune all the time in this kind of nice way, I think.
Wow, well, let's hear it. That's Beauty and the Beast from Wendy Carlos, a 1986. Ain't no REM in that.
No, this one never charted. I don't know why not. Yeah, it gets right to the chorus, and I mean, you know, well, you just can't explain the people sometimes.
It's what got you interested in this?
like, I work in the studio most of the time listening to mostly, you know, kind of conventional music, right? So what's better than something that's not in tune and has no structure that you can find or anything else? It's a great antidote, you know, to listening. And so after you've listened to this for a while, you're just dying to hear, you know, the Gap Band, you know? I mean,
exactly.
You're dying, you know what I mean? And I love that. I love that sort of way it sets you up for the next thing you're going to listen to.
Yeah. Listen to it, like, when this is my first time hearing this, but, like, the first thing that came to my mind when the synth came in, it kind of reminded me of the Stevie Wonder Secret Life of Plants album. Mm. It was the record that he just did. It was supposed to be like the soundtrack to this movie about plants, but the movie never came out. And it was like his album that didn't really do that well. You know, it kind of, the critics kind of ran away from it. But like, it was just, a lot of it was just really just instrumental and synth-based. And that was the first thing that came to my mind when I heard that, just that real kind of eerie synth stuff. And I remember that the Secret Life of Plants album cover was the one album cover that you didn't see in a lot of black people's houses. Like, everybody didn't have that one. Everybody had Hotter Than July. Everybody had Songs of the Kid. Like, Secret Life of Plants was like, okay, I don't know if we got that one. You know what I'm saying? It was like that and the Marvin Gaye Hear My Dear album. It was the same way. Like, everyone had all the other albums, but Hear My Dear was like, okay, I don't know. So that album, like, in time, like, I went back and bought the reissue, and I've come to appreciate it now because melodically he was doing just a lot of real interesting things on it. And I've always been a fan of Stevie for his, like, you know, his synth kind of pioneer thing. So with this Wendy Carlos record, that was just the first thing that came to my mind.
That's interesting. Mitch, when you first heard this, I mean, you talked about it being a welcome break, but is there something that you find attractive about it, something you find aesthetically pleasing as well?
Well, when you hear the whole thing, there's a lot of kind of bell sounds on here because this was an early digital synth record, and they were really the first synths that could do these kind of convincing, sort of truly kind of metal-sounding bells, you know? And I think I just like bells, you know? Maybe I just have bells ringing in my head. But I just read that book about Krakatoa that's just such a great book, so it sounds Indonesian to me, you know? And so it was just working with what I was thinking about lately. I was just, you know, kind of digging that Indonesian vibe, and this record definitely evokes that. In fact, there's some track on here that's got like the word Sumatra in it or something, so I think I think Wendy was thinking that too. But you know, I just thought it was kind of beautiful and kind of strange, and I like the fact that I just can't imagine how she put it together. You know, I don't know what the starting point was, because it's sort of a handmade record. Wow. So it wasn't you know, like now you could sort of assemble that kind of visually, you know, on a, you know, audio software.
So this was
she has a home studio in New York, I think, that she's worked out of forever, and that's where it was done.
So then you're listening to it also, I guess, with the ear of a producer. You know, how do you get that sound? How do you put together those elements?
Yeah, it's true. I mean, for me, that sort of is part of the fun. I don't think it ruins the art at all for me to try to imagine how they made it. And for some reason, that's evocative to me. So a lot of records where I picture the session and I think, that sounds like that must have been so much fun. You know, those records, I'll just kind of like them, you know. This isn't exactly a fun record. But anyway, yes, I do like to imagine the process.
Well, this tonal music, kind of an interesting thing to me. I mean, when you think about it, going back even to Stravinsky, and, you know, he sets off a riot with Rite of Spring when he does exactly what you said. You know, he kind of breaks free of any structure. What was the starting point? But it has been something that's interested musicians for the better part of this century. How do we create you know, a kind of music based on tone, the texture of the instrument, the way it strikes your ear, I guess, rather than any preconceived notion about the structure, the beat, the rhythm, you know, the storyline, the narrative. Mm-hmm.
Well, there's something that people think about music, and they don't have to know what they're talking about at all, but they think it really hard, you know? And that's another one of the great things about the way music appreciation works. Like, it can work on a informed level, but it can also work on a really uninformed level, mm-hmm. you know? So you can have this thing where,
it's
like,
kind of a gut level instinct type thing.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, so it's interesting how that changes. Like, right now, you got to wonder what's going to really have a lot of impact, because it feels like we're being hit over the head, you know? Whereas, like, you know, 300 years ago, you could start a riot by, you know, having the first violinist play a little louder or something. You know what I mean? People were so refined at one time, and now they're sort of just the opposite. But that always swings back and forth.
As artists, and I'll start with you, Mitch, do you find yourself saying, you know, you talk about this gut instinct. You hear something. There's a sound, a tone, a set of tones that may not be related, you know, structurally. And you think, hey, that sounds cool. And then is there the musician in you, the performer in you, who says, get that thought out of your head, Mitch. It'll never say, you know, nobody's going to want to hear this except me.
Oh, I don't care. I mean, you know.
That's the way to be.
About it working on me. I mean, I can understand the sort of commercial stuff that floats around something, but the thing that gives me, because if it was strictly by the rules, you know, you just might as well give up, right? Because it's sort of been done, right? I mean, the really big hits are always sort of contrary and odd, right? You know, so I mean, that's the hopeful thing about it. And so when you think about it that way, those things that break the rules or whatever, or that just maybe appeal to you and nobody else, that doesn't mean that that's necessarily gonna fail. I mean, yes, it's going to fail most of the time, but I think you just have to believe
yourself.
You have
to stick with your gut, yeah.
You have to stick with your gut or you get sick of it.
Yeah, because the only thing you have in the music is just feeling, man. It's like a lot of it is just based on just feeling and just kind of just that raw emotion. So, you know, you can make a song that you think is, you know, the best work of your life and people could totally trash it. But at the end of the day, you have to please yourself, man, because in the business of making records, that's really all you have is just your own personal integrity and your own feelings about it. And the minute you try to just start pleasing everybody and playing to, you know, all these different crowds, I mean, you're really gonna make yourself miserable. You can make a lot of money doing that, but that doesn't necessarily equate to happiness in my book anyway.
Yeah, it'll work for a while, and then, you know, I mean, my fear is to not get a feeling out of something. Mm-hmm. So I'm staying clear of things that are gonna
I would rather for people hate me and just detest me than to just be like, okay, all right. Like, I would rather get a 1-star rating in Rolling Stone than like a 3-star rating or a 2-star rating. Like, that is the worst rating ever to me. Like, to just be mediocre, you know? That's like saying you're not even good enough to be bad. You're just, you made an album, okay.
That said, Fonte, when we asked you about your all-time favorite songs, you did pick the King of Pop, who has always been concerned about his image, and certainly
concerned about a whole lot more than his image right now.
Exceptionally,
you might be concerned about his freedom right now. No.
But anyway, let's hear this. Let's hear the tune, and we'll talk a little bit about it. It's Michael Jackson's "I Can't Help It."
Surprise, I can't help but see you running often through my mind, helpless like a baby. Since your disguise, I can't help but love you. It's getting better all the time.
Yes, you are listening to The State of Things. That's Michael Jackson's I Can't Help It. 1979 album, Off the Wall.
Off the wall.
Me are Fonte Coleman's here from the hip-hop group Little Brother, also Mitch Easter, indie rock producer, and talking about their music picks. So, Fonte, why'd you pick that song?
Man, that's just one of my favorite songs ever. Yeah. Like, that is really a desert island song. Like, if I could only play one song for the rest of my life, that would probably be it. And I don't know, man. It was just, for years, I had the Off the Wall album, and all I would listen to was the first side. So I never made it to the second side. Like, all I would listen to was Don't Stop Till You Get Enough, Rock With You, and Working Day and Night. And, like, that was it. So I never made it to the second side. So it wasn't until I was maybe, like, 12 or 13 where a DJ friend of mine turned the record over, and he played I Can't Help It. And immediately I recognized it as the song that De La Soul, another rap group, they had sampled I Can't Help It for another one of their songs that I really liked. And so I was like, wow, so that's – it was like, you know, all this time it had been laying right under my nose, and I never found it. So immediately, once I figured out what that song was, I mean, I went and bought off the like 2-3 copies off the wall on vinyl. I bought it on CD, and like I just love that song, man. And Stevie Wonder, coincidentally, he actually wrote it. And so when we were picking out songs for this show, I couldn't fit all the songs I wanted. I knew I had to have a Stevie song on there somewhere, but it wasn't a slot for me to pick another Stevie song. So that was kind of like the best of both worlds with Stevie and Michael working together. So
you
that
can
was
sure
wild.
Hear the Stevie Wonder in there.
Oh, too. Yeah, with the especially yeah. with the keyboards and, you know, yeah. the melody. That song was just really, that was like the soft side of Mike. Like, that was the Mike I missed. If that Mike came back, I think he might could beat the rap, for real. If he started making songs like that again, they might let him go. They might leave him alone.
Mitch, let me turn to you now. One of your favorite songs of all time was actually one that you had forgotten about for a while.
Yeah, Final Solution is this Perrybu song that I've always loved since I first heard it when I was in college. Some friend of mine had it, you know, had the indie single that they had got out of a weird indie magazine or something. And then I came across it finally, you know, recently in Chapel Hill on a CD, because I don't think it ever came out on a CD. It was really an obscure little song, but it's kind of famous, you know. Kind of predates punk rock just a little bit, and it's definitely got a kind of punk rock sensibility, but, you know, it's also got this kind of classic, you know, teen, you know, dislocation kind of set of lyrics, mm-hmm. but they're kind of smart ones, you know, a little bit beyond the usual self-pitying stuff. Although it's self-pitying, it's also really wry, you know, so they're jokers, you know. All it's right, well, cool sounding, and it's just a track that sort of stands alone.
Well, let's hear it. 1976 now. This is Final Solution by Perrybu. Final Solution, Perrybu. That was 1976. Mitch, how does Perrybu fit into your own life or your own musical evolution?
I think around that time I was trying to figure out what to do with myself, and I knew what I wanted it to be, which was to somehow be in the music biz. You know, I wanted to play music, but I also was really interested in recording. And records like that made me want to record. You know, there was kind of a obvious kind of familiar rock thing going on, but there was also this kind of new kind of chaotic sound, which was sort of, all of us who gravitated towards punk rock were maybe people who had, like, you know, funny voices and stuff and thought, ah, here's a place for us, you know. So that song, you know, kind of had that angle to it. And if you heard the end has just sort of a glorious sound. It's all sort of dark and only vaguely tonal, and then at the end it sort of comes together in this almost pretty part, you know, and it just really appealed to my sort of pop leanings, but also with a sort of messed up subversive angle that was also really attractive to me as a you know, youth. But I just think it's like a song that when I still hear it, I think about them making the record and the weird, probably total lack of fans they had in Cleveland, and yet they had this vision to make this record, and I don't know, the whole thing's just kind of appealing to me.
All right, well, we are talking with musician and indie rock record producer Mitch Easter, also rapper Fonte Coleman of Little Brother and the Foreign Exchange, about their favorite music. Just ahead, what does Fonte drop in the CD player when he thinks no one else is listening? We'll ask our guests about their guilty listening pleasure. Stay with us. This is The State of Things. I'm Frank Stacio. We're talking this hour about music. What do producer Mitch Easter and rapper Fonte Coleman listen to when they're off the clock? Two musicians are with us now. And Mitch, I want to get to another one of your favorites. This is a song that you became familiar with in college. Is that right?
Yeah, I seem to be coming back to the old college days today. yes, I think the reason why a lot of these records sound good to me now is because they were those sort of transitional, you know, records into the punk era, which I'll always hold dear, I guess. And the Cheap Trick record's interesting because they were obviously trying to sort of play the game and be like a big-time rock band, but this first, well, they were always a little bit subversive in a way that was attractive to me. Mandocello, though, is just a real pretty song, and I just love the way it's put together.
Let's hear it. Cheap Trick on The State of Things. the Mandocello from their 1977 album. What we're doing today is talking with music producer Mitch Easter and rapper Fonte Coleman about their musical choices. What would they bring with them on the desert island if that's all they had to pick? This song, Mitch, you said, you know, again, college years, were you starting to listen as a producer? This song is really nicely put together.
Yeah, that was hot. I like that.
Oh, well, I think I always did. You know, I remember seeing this show when I was a real little kid called The Songwriters, and it was about people like Burt Bacharach and stuff, and it was great. And it showed all these people in the studio and how they made up songs and stuff, and I just was glued to the TV. And I mean, so I must have just always been attracted to that whole notion of what they're really doing back there, you know. But yeah, definitely by the time this record came out, I wanted to do it. I was ready to go, you know. I would have been happy to have dropped out of school and cleaned the toilets at, you know, the record plant or something at that point.
Listen, I want to move on to your guilty pleasures now. Here's the embarrassing moment. The stuff in your collection that you don't want anybody to know that is there. And Fonte, what would that be in your case?
My guilty pleasure is Joe Jackson, Stepping Out. That's from 1982, from his album Night and Day. And people are surprised to know that I like this song, but man, I think the song is great.
Let's hear it.
Faster than I thought it was.
Yeah, it is.
Joe Jackson on The State of Things from a 1982 album, Night and Day. We're listening to the Desert Island picks of Fonte Coleman of Little Brother and Mitch Easter, indie rock producer, here on the program talking about now their guilty pleasures. Fonte, when did you first hear that?
Man, I first heard that song, Frank. I guess I was little, and you know, again, 7, 8 years old. And I just remember the two video shows that I used to watch were Friday Night Videos and Night Tracks that used to come on TBS. And this was, you know, during the 80s, you know, when videos were just beginning to be big. And, you know, John Cougar Mellencamp, like I just, you know, all Rick Springfield, like all the 80s, those 80s dudes. Like I remember I used to listen to all that stuff. And last time, my last day job, I was working at Belk's. Shout out to Belk's. Y'all held me down for a good time till I quit on you. Life happens.
They miss you.
Yeah, they miss you. I know. I wish I could say the same for them, but hey, it's all good. But yeah, I was working at Belk's, and they would have, like, you know, the little station playing the little tape loop or whatever. And this song came on, Stepping Out came on, and I was like, oh my God, what's the name of this song? And I was asking everybody in the store, and nobody knew. And so it wasn't until, like, later on I got off work that day and went to one of my friend's house. And I asked him, I was like, look, man, there was a song from the 80s I heard at work today. And I can't sing no lyrics, but, you know, I kind of hummed him a little bit of the melody. He was like, oh, that's Stepping Out by Joe Jackson. And he had it. And so immediately once he put me onto it, I went and bought the Joe Jackson Greatest Hits and, you know, all that, and, like, got it for myself. But it just really just reminds me of just the 80s, man, just kind of just being just that little kid just watching videos and being just so, I get so excited, you know, by all this new music that was coming out, and just wondering one day how I could be like that, like hoping that someday, you know, 20 years later, a little kid would see me on TV and be like, hey, and make him feel the same way that I felt when I was that age. You know what I'm saying? So it just kind of just reminds me of that 80s, my 80s kind of, you know, optimism, you know, I guess, of just, you know, being just a starry-eyed kid with his sights on show business or whatever. Now it's not that much of a surprise, but, you know, if I would play this in front of my mom, she'd be like, "What? No, I did not raise you on that. What are you doing?" You know, but
no son of mine.
You know what I'm saying? But it's a good song, man. And, like, you know, good. If it's good, it's good all across the board. Like, just no matter what type of music it is, if it's just got that soul in it, I'm on it, man.
All right, Mitch, guilty pleasure?
Well, you know, I'm not that guilty about it, but it would be very embarrassing to play this and say, yes, this is my sort of thing, without my little speech, which I'll try to keep small. Should I rip into my speech?
Go ahead, give us.
Okay, so my guilty song here is Montague Terrace in Blue by Scott Walker. And, you know, Scott Walker was known to some people who are still alive as a member of the Walker Brothers, who had like a hit in the mid-60s. They were like these sort of hit makers, you know. But Scott couldn't take too much of that and split off on his own and started making these incredibly preposterous records that were very influential. I used to read about him, but I didn't know what he sounded like. But people like David Bowie and Julian Cope and maybe guys like Morrissey's, all these sort of crooner guys would cite Scott Walker, and I was like, what's with that? And I finally heard this stuff, and it was like, oh my goodness. You know, this song is quite spectacular if you make it all the way into the chorus. And I don't know of another song who has lines like swallowed in the stomach room right up at the beginning, you know. And this was a hit. This is the weirdest thing of all. These Scott Walker records were big in England, but not in here.
Now, were they big here? I don't remember this particular.
The Walker Brothers had one hit. The Sun Ain't Gonna Shine Anymore was one U.S. hit. I think that was it. They had like 2,000 hits in England, you know. I mean, and I think that was the leverage that allowed Scott to go off on his own and make these crazy expensive records, because he was a name there. And he has continued to make records, which are so weird now, they're hardly even music. So, well, good for him.
Let's hear this one. Montague Terrace in Blue by Scott Walker.
The little clocks stop ticking now. We're swallowed in the stomach room.
I like those strings. I sample that, man. Like, yeah.
It's nice stuff.
The only sound to tear the night comes from the man upstairs.
Yeah, what was he thinking?
His bloated, belching figure.
See, Mitch, to me, this is Frank Sinatra meets Spike Jonze.
Well,
exactly.
Maybe that's it.
Yeah. It sounds like a parody of a lounge song. You know what I'm saying? It's like it's so over the top.
Yeah,
he is kind of a joker, but he never lets on. I mean, he's very serious looking.
Yeah, it's a real earnest delivery, without a doubt.
Well, he's got quite a voice. It's a whole orchestra. I mean, there's like 100 people playing on this.
This reminds me of, I don't know if you're a Rotary Connection. Rotary.
Yeah.
It reminds me of that, like just those Charles Stepney, his real just big orchestral arrangements and choral. That's hot.
The girl across the hall makes love. Her thoughts lay cold like shattered stone. Her thighs are full of tales to tell of all the nights she's known. Your eyes ignite like cold blue fire. The scent of secrets everywhere. A fist filled with illusions clutches all our cares. But we know, don't we? And we'll dream, won't we? Of Montague.
That's Scott Walker, Montague Terrace in Blue, and I'm thinking, Mitch, that this is the kind of tune a producer waits until the artist is out the door and says, okay, bring out the special effects.
Well, you know, I've converted a number of people who have come into my studio to Scottdom, and I don't know what that means, you know, but I think it's it can't be bad.
Was this one a hit? That was hot.
Yeah, well, thank you.
Yeah, like the strings, man, like, you know, it's just... Again, it's that soul, it's the element, man. You find that one element, and that's what hip-hop is about. It's just like taking that one good element of the song that everybody else think is crappy. And even you might think it's just crappy and cheesy, whatever, but every song has the good part. And so hip-hop's just about taking the good part from that song and looping it over and over and over again until you make one big good part. And that's what hip-hop is.
Well, you brought another favorite with you, and we have time for one more, so why don't we listen to this one from Prince?
This guitar was actually sampled by MC Light.
"17 Days" by Prince. That was that's a B-side, Fonte. Did you ever hear the A-side?
Yeah, I can't remember the A-side. It was either "When Doves Cry" or but it was the B-side to one of his hits. Like it was "When Doves Cry" or. But you
were drawn to this side. What drew you to this particular tune?
Man, it just sounded like it was a hit. It sounded like a hit that just needed an album. You know what I'm saying? It was just the story, the hook. Just the drum. I mean, it was just undeniable all around, man. It made you want to dance, and it was one of my favorite Prince songs, man.
Well, Fonte, thank you very much. Fonte Coleman, rapper with the Durham-based hip-hop group Little Brother, also sings for the Foreign Exchange, which just released its first album, Connected. Fonte, thanks very much.
Thanks a lot. It's always a lot of fun, Frank.
And record producer Mitch Easter, a tribute album to his 80s rock band Let's Active, was released last year on an Australian record label. That album is called Every Word. Mitch, thanks very much.
My pleasure.
Our program today, produced by Jordana Gustafson, written by Dave DeWitt, and mixed and directed by Keith Weston. Robin Copley's our technical director, Fred Wasser, executive producer. That's the state of things for today. If you have a comment, you can drop us an email at sot@wunc.org. Support for the State of Things comes from the Corporation for Public Broadcasting. I'm Frank Stacia.
You're the one who's always lonely. And I'm the one who's always alone.